just as darkness is scared away by the dawn.
Enthused by the great compassion and eliminated all the afflicted views. And when it comes to the view, there are different views, the profound views and also the wrong views. And as all of us being same and common in terms of not willing to undergo suffering and wish to have happenings. And the real cause of all the problems and the sufferings is the untamed mind. And none of us actually purposely have an untamed mind, but due to the presence of great afflictions, we are not able to tame our mind. And also when it comes to the afflictions, I think we can say the attachment and anger. So they are the non-view afflictions. And this kind of attachment and anger, so the basis of these afflictions are what we call the wisdom-related afflictions. So therefore, since they are viewing the object against the reality of the emptiness, so any kind of mind, which is the aspirational aspect or what we call the skillful means, will not be able to eliminate this ignorance and the emotions. So therefore, the main antidote that we need to apply here is the wisdom realizing emptiness. So therefore, Nagarjuna, in the phrase, in the third line, he used that, due to the presentation of the Buddha's teaching and by the emptiness, all afflictions be eliminated. And if you look at the deeds of the Buddha, the main teachings or the noble deeds are pertaining to his speech. And so for that, we refer to Lord Buddha as the incomparable guide. And when we look for the two lineage, the wisdom lineage studies from the Lord Buddha himself to then Manjushri. And from that, I prostrate to, as the line goes, I prostrate to Manjushri and Nagarjuna, who are the lineage of the wisdom continuation, wisdom lineage. And these masters are also referred to as the ornaments of the vault. And I think almost 600 years have passed since Lama Tsongkhapa came to this world. And the Tibetan origination, the theory of the Tibetan origination and the concept of it is considered as one of the most profound concept that can be explained even today and accepted by all. If you look at our environment also, and also the global warming and so on, all this happened due to related or dependence upon some other factors. So if we look further and try to find the cause of all than this, then we are not able to find it. So therefore, that's why it's called the merely designated. But in quantum, so this aspect is a little bit difficult to explain. But generally, everything happens produced or happen by the collection of different causes and conditions. And I think the politicians who have great authority and power, and there are many politicians with authority who goes only on one side. And I think we need to teach the politicians also about the Tibetan origination so that the mind can be broader. But now, at present, we can see the most politicians in the world are very narrow-minded. So in order to accomplish their target, they indulge in killing and so on. And if you look at the current state of the world, it's a very bad state. So the incomparable supreme leader, the Lord Buddha, so among the great teachings that he gave, the most profound and exemplary of all these teachings are the teachings on perfection of wisdom. And the Perfection of Wisdom Sutra also have the evident contained as the emptiness and non-evident in terms present, the teachings on the method, skillful means and so on, in terms of the realizations and so on. So first, even to generate understanding of the Buddha's teaching, so in terms of the intelligent person, we need to generate a certain understanding of emptiness as it presented in the ornaments of the Middle Way philosophy, the order of the intelligent one in terms of entering the Mayana path has to be first generate the wisdom realizing emptiness. Then when it, as for the lesser intelligent, of course it's different. And Lama Tsongkhapa has great aspiration in terms of, if you look at the texts and the sutras where Lama Tsongkhapa has been professed, he offering the golden crystal mala to the Buddhas and having generated the bodhicitta mind. And also Lama Tsongkhapa's writings are very profound, especially when it comes to the teaching on emptiness and the Vajrayana. And today here, so we are going to read the commentary on the special insight chapter of the Lama Rinpoche-mo, which is also referred to as the great extensive presentation on the spiritual insight. And I got this text, the commentary by Shama Rinpoche, early 1960s, very soon after I came to India. And with the help of some other masters and Kulu regions, I printed this text. And this eloquence writing is, I think there are many commentaries for the special insight chapter of Lama Tsongkhapa, but this is a very different and a very quite unique one compared to the other commentaries. And after looking for the lineage of this text, then I got the transmission from Daba Gyatso, one of the Goloks Lama, coming from Golok region, and I received the initial part of his text and also the text on the spiritual insight. And I think he is also related to the ancient Yuma tradition and a student of Dogo Rinchen, and also completed all his studies. And the Rinchen master, and he used to emphasize the study as the main important factor for his monasteries. And I do not remember clearly to whom he listened to this transmission. And I requested Venerable Daba Gyatso to look for the lineage of this transmission. And later, he received from a very old and a yogi. I think at that time he was about 106 years. His name is also Dinzin Gyatso. And I also explained a little bit yesterday, and during the bad time in Tibet, the dark age in Tibet, so he undergo a lot of sufferings. And from time to time, sorry. And when he is able to find the course or the normal food, he depends on those foods. And otherwise, he depends on the extracting the essence from the flowers and the stones, what we call the Chulen practice. And Venerable Daba Gyatso received the transmission from this great master. And after receiving the master, the transmission, then the master also passed away. So in order to do the presentation on special insight, first we will recite the praise of Manjushri Ganglomma. And in front of you, visualize the Lord Buddha, who is the incomparable guide, then also the Manjushri, who is the compendium or the collection of all the Buddha's wisdom and the wisdom lineage, and also the method lineage, and so on. So if that is not possible, the Lord Buddha himself in front of you, and Manjushri on the right, and Nagarjuna on the left. I think if you're able to imagine in this way, that should be enough. and Manjushri as the embodiment of all the wisdom. And as it says in the praise that he, in the form of a very youthful state and being the ability to eliminate all the ignorance. So this line has a significance where it speaks about eliminating all the ignorance. And for that, the main teaching on emptiness comes. And emptiness also, here is a special one which is backed and supported by all the other great realizations. So with such a kind of understanding on the emptiness and the accumulation of the path, we will be able to eliminate all the afflictions at the soonest possible time. And we even the arahats, those are liberated from samsara, they, even though they are free of suffering, but they still have the ignorance pertaining to the obscurations of to omniscient mind. So therefore, when the third line in the praise of Manjushri says, he is the one who clear or eliminates all the ignorance of the world, so we refer to those ignorance even in the heart of the arahats. And we have to visualize that the wisdom within us, the intelligence, is due to the blessing of Manjushri. And of course, we need to make supplication to Manjushri. And the most important is we have to contemplate ourselves. Also, the listening to the teaching, critical reflection, and meditative absorption, and so on. As Don Rinpoche said that, I also meditate when I listen to the teachings, and I also do critical reflection when I listen to the teachings, and so on. So in terms, he says that all the three means of study, he also always combined together whenever he engaged in his studies. So if we if you study and do further, of course, it will not come in a day or two, but in about 10 years or something, you will see some great result. And sometimes something or some realization that you could even cannot imagine that it could come in 100 years may come in 10 years. So therefore, we're going to read the praise of Manjushri. Please recite together. The praise to Manjushri, glorious wisdom's excellent qualities. Homage to the Lama and Jizun Lord Majugosha. You perceive the whole of reality exactly as it is, and so hold the book of transcendental wisdom at your heart. You look upon all beings imprisoned with samsara and shrouded by the thick darkness of ignorance and tormented by suffering. With the love of a mother for her only child, you enlighten speech endowed with 60 melody stones, like the thundering roar for dragons. So recite the Manjushri's mantra here. Om Arabaza Nadidididididididi. Dispelling the darkness of ignorance, you wield the sword of wisdom to cut through all sufferings. Pure from the very beginning, you have reached the end of the 10 bhumis and perfected all enlightened qualities, foremost of the Buddha's hearers. With all of your kindness and love, let your wisdom's shining light clear the darkness of my ignorance once and for all. Grant me, I pray, the intelligence, the brilliance, to understand the scriptures, the words of Buddha and works of the masters. So page number 309, the Tibetan text. So the name of the text is Lamp Illuminating the Subtle Intention of Buddha with respect to Special Insight. The first verse is pay homage to Lama Tsongkhapa. From the mantle of seeing all aspects, having reached the sublime primordial wisdom, to emanate 100,000 sharp rays of light in order to open the blessed lotus garden of Lobsang's tradition, skilled orator, you teach the renowned vast path of liberation to transcending the number of particles in the oceans. O gentle protectors, the best son amongst all teachers, I shall rely on you as my eternal refuges from the depth of my heart. The embodiment of all the perfectly enlightened Buddhas, a treasure vault of the profoundly secret 84,000 teachings. The melodious one, renowned as the chief of great noble Sangha, wait till I look for the furthest reaches of repaying your kindness. And if you contemplate on the teachings of Lama Tsongkhapa, the first verse of the In Praise of Tibetan Origination, that he who seen the Tibetan origination and taught, so such a person is the supreme master. And also in the three principal parts, that so therefore make effort in order to realize the Tibetan origination. So Lama Tsongkhapa didn't mention that make effort to realize emptiness. So instead, he mentioned the Tibetan origination. So therefore, this signifies the importance of the middle way philosophy and the middle way view, which clears all the afflicted views and so on. And even the Svatantrika Madhyamika school also speaks about the emptiness, but the very subtle or the deep understanding with respect to Tibetan origination, I think, is only found in the highest Madhyamika school. In order to write on the difficult point of the great penetrative insight section, so His Holiness comments that in order to have a great understanding of the special chapter, so Chöpen Rinpoche used to say that Lama Tsongkhapa has the extensive and the middle presentation on the special insight, and also the speech of eloquence, and also the commentary on fundamental of middle way. So these five texts are the supreme texts presenting on the emptiness. So if we study, then we could leave a very strong imprints on understanding the view of emptiness. So this is what Chöpen Rinpoche used to say, and I think that is true. And Gen Tongben and Venerable Gen Nyima also consider the fundamental of the wisdom text as very important text. And as for Gen Tongpen, he has a tradition that when he gives the teaching on the commentary on the fundamental of wisdom by Lama Tsongkhapa, then he makes all his students memorize the root text of the fundamental of wisdom. And in our monastic institutions, we have also the tradition of memorizing the supplement to middle way by Chandakriti, but we do not have the very much tradition of memorizing the fundamental of wisdom. So therefore, I think that we need to also pay importance to understand the middle philosophy and memorize the root text. In order to write on the difficult point of great penetrative insight section, which is the incomparable excellent teaching that establishes reality. So I think now it's too late. So maybe tomorrow or day after tomorrow. So if you bring the Lakdong Chemo, the chapter on special insight by Lama Tsongkhapa, then if you compare the two texts and also compare between the two texts, and when the commentaries and explanation comes from here, and you can also read. And I think that there are many online listeners and also listening on the radio. So if they have this text, or even if they do not have this Shamra text, then they can review or to look at the Lakdong Chemo text, Lama Tsongkhapa's special insight chapter. When proving that in order to develop the special penetrative insight, so the special insight here refers to the understanding of the suchness or the emptiness. The stages of meditation book says it is the dawn of the knowledge which overcomes the darkness of confusion. And if you have the Lama Rinpoche Mo's English translation, this quotation is available on page number 109. All the sayings of Bhagavan were spoken well, directly or indirectly. They all elucidate and point to reality. If I know reality, I will escape all of the entanglements of dogmatic views. So the stages of meditation, the extensive, the middle, and the brief are very important. Lama Tsongkhapa also, when explaining the calm abidance and special insight, he pays special importance to the stages of meditation, the text by Kamala Shila. So, and Lobin Padmasambhava requested Kamala Shila to write the text on the meditation. And at that time, the Hashang from China, he has a sense of a view where he feels satisfied by not undertaking or focusing on anything. So he is also consider himself a meditator. But first, we have to rely on the wisdom realizing or wisdom based on listening to scripture and then critical reflection and so on. So then he maintains that the contemplative reflection and listening to the scriptural teaching may not be necessary. And his standpoint was that merely the meditative absorption is enough to generate the understanding of the reality. So therefore, those criticisms and the critics actually are based on not understanding the whole picture of the teachings of Lama Tsongkhapa and so on. And in the Nalanda traditions, especially about special traditions to develop the ultimate wisdom based on the three wisdom, that is by listening to the scriptural teachings and then meditative reflection and meditative absorption. So therefore, they requested Kamala Shila to Tibet and also did a lot of discussions and debate. And also the king at that time also stand as a also overview this and so the debate as the discussions move on. And he ultimately said that if you can bring in writing all the discussions that you have, it will be wonderful. So that's how we have the extensive and the middling stages of meditation, Bhavana Krama by Kamala Shila. Sorry. Page number 310. And in the Bhavana Krama, the stages of meditation says that once you are in the path to seeing, the preliminary path to seeing the emptiness directly, and where the four levels of those path, which is known as the heat and so on, at that time, the meditator is experience a certain different levels of the understanding of emptiness, the conceptual understanding of the emptiness with respect to the clarity of the emptiness and the object. And once we are in the meditative absorption, at that time, even though that meditative absorption on emptiness eliminates all the afflicted emotions, but we say that at that stage, the meditative have not gained the truth of cessations. So it's not considered as free of the gross level of afflicted emotions. Then there is another view that the Dhamma jewel, which is one of the three jewels, and which is also said to have possessed of eight qualities, and one of them having the qualities of cessation, which is the moksha. So in this way, all the arahat levels of understanding has to be labeled as having possessed the cessation. So here, when we refer to the one that is pure of these afflicted emotions, actually we have to refer to the next meditative absorption or the realization that one gains after the first emptiness realization as the main antidote. And the next moment when the meditative absorption eliminates all the coarse afflicted emotions, one is said to attain the truth of cessation. Sorry. So when we refer to the term the pure, or that is clear of all the afflicted emotions, there are different presentations that we can find in the Gyatsabji's commentary on the Abhisamaya Alamkara and also Lama Tsongkhapa's The Rosary of Eloquence of Speech. So therefore, it is also stated that even if you have attained all the eight concentrations, if you lack the wisdom realizing emptiness, then you will not be able to eliminate the afflicted emotions. So I think we need to draw a distinction in respect to the views of the Hashang. And Shandarakshita, the master of Kamalashila, and he built the Samya monastery at that time. And we also have a reference to the monastery as the four world and the minor world and so on. And within that, there are many sections where special quarter or special sections for translation and special for meditative absorption and so on. And the Hashang tradition at that time is majorly focused on merely practicing the meditative absorptions or staying in meditation. And this is also under the sustain or under the look after by the Dhammaraja of Tibet at that time. So it shows very clearly that all the traditions and the views of the Hashang, or all that follows the Hashang traditions, are not to be negated. So therefore, it makes very clear that the Hashang tradition may be someone who pays or implies more importance to the meditative realizations and the wisdom based on listening and critical reflection is paid less importance. I think there is no wrong with that. But later, they totally ignore the first two wisdoms and consider the third one as the ultimate, which is wrong. And when I was in Japan, some of the university schools, when I visit, they asked me, and some of the teachers says that to become enlightened, you don't need to study. And merely by meditation, you could reach the state of enlightenment. So even today, when we refer to as meditative yogis, so they consider themselves as a mere meditating on the yogis. I think there is nothing wrong with being a meditative yogis and concentrating on meditations. But the object, your meditation is different. If you have a very good understanding of the object of your meditation, then there is no wrong with that. Other than that, if your object of meditation is not clear, then it of no use. I used to say that when I was in winter in New Delhi hotels, when I see the early morning, that I can see the pigeons also sitting in a very still manner. So if you look at them, they also look as they're in a meditative state. So even though when you try to touch them, they look at, their eyesight is there. But so if merely the meditative equipoise or concentration is very important, it will be similar to that. And those pigeons also stay for a long time standing still among the others. And the mere term of understanding, the free of all the obscurations, maybe the term may be same, but the meaning of that term differs from each and each traditions and practice, especially when it comes to the highest yoga tantra, it is very different. And in Lam Rim Chemo, Lama Tsongkhapa said that by just taking a grain, then he refers that all the grains are like this by their nature. So therefore, it is important to draw a distinction between the different series of meditation. And also the term ultimate also plays a significant role. Even the non-Buddhist also uses the term ultimate. and for the Christian practitioners. So even though they do not use the term ultimate or Dundamba, but now it seems they have some similar references to the to that term. For example, when the self or the I is being created by the God, so there is no other sense of self which is other than the one created by the God. So of course, then if we explain in this way, then the sense of what we call the selflessness also arrives. And Hashang and so on. So this other verse, I think it may not just be the Hashang, but in Tibet also we can find many other practitioners and all over the world which just consider the meditative concentration as the ultimate of all the practice. Sorry. The Hashang is normally referred to as Udraga. So there is a term term quoted here from the special inside chapter of Lama Tsongkhapa, that from now on to the great master. So this is being explained here as being going to one's spiritual master and then studying the definitive meaning with respect to the different texts from one's master. And if one generates a kind of accumulations with respect to understanding the emptiness, it is called the collection with respect to spiritual insight. And Udraka and his followers also do not pay importance, as explained before, to the wisdom based on listening to the scripture and by critical reflection. And they play all the importance to the mind, a state of a still mind, which is not at all focusing or meditating on any particular object. And such a kind of state they refer to as the spiritual insight. And this is a great wrong view here. Sorry. And also when we refer to the suchness, it is actually we are referring to the perfection of wisdom or the sixth perfection, which is the wisdom realizing emptiness. So in, within the Tibetan masters, there are different views with respect to some claiming that the concentrations, the mind of concentrations cannot realize emptiness. So in order to, so according to such kind of the assertions, then we have to accept that the six perfections are contradictory within among themselves. But in other texts, we can find the definitions of each of these perfections, and it seems that there is some similarity or the common ground for these six perfections. Sorry. And in order to gain such a kind of wisdom realizing emptiness, we have to rely on what is called the four reliances. And the four reliances actually start with the first one, rely on a definitive meaning rather than interpretable meaning. So we need to analyze and gain the wisdom based on such four reliances. And Gondar Rinpoche, in his text, have written that even for the intelligent bodhisattvas or the other practitioners, so before realizing the emptiness, they might be able to enter or enter into the study of a text. And he also quote from the text that those kind of the students who engaged who are of the great intelligence may even engage in the study of a particular text by merely having doubt on that the contents of that text. So, of the students who study the text, generally categorized into two, the intelligent one and the non-intelligent ones. And as I said before, so some of those students are actually even though intelligent, but they do not understand the reality, but merely by generating doubt on the content of the text, for example, the purpose, the content, and the relationship between and so on. So even though they do not have the wisdom understanding all this, but without this is that if we put into implementation of whatever being said by the text, then is there any contradictory happening if you practice in this way? So in this way, they engage in the reasoning analyzation. Then later, they generate the conviction. So therefore, when they generate the conviction, then they find that the ultimate goal is there. So generally, the text is said to have the four sets of the content, which is the first, the content of the text, and next is the purpose, and second is the main purpose of the purpose, then the relationship between these three. So having understood these four qualities with respect to a text, a student engages in the critical study of a text. And the more intelligent student, having entered the study of the text to merely generating a sense of doubt about the content of the text, is even further proved in Lama Tsongkhapa's The Rosary of Eloquence, the Golden Rosary text. And it is said in the Golden of the Rosary that all the texts, scriptural texts, are supposed to have the four presentations with respect to the purpose of the purpose, and so on. And when this is presented by a particular line of the text, which is called the line presenting the purpose and so on, so then the intelligent student automatically generate doubt with respect to that presentation. And they enter into the study of the text and make further analyzations with respect to whether, as per the presentation of the text, the things are as per the presentation or not. And if they find that as per the presentation, if the fact is there, then they engage or enter into the study of the text. Otherwise, they revert back from entering into that text. So this way of engaging to study a scriptural text, it with respect to or pertaining to the more intelligent students. So in the Rosary of the Golden by Lama Tsongkhapa, Lama Tsongkhapa maintains a special reference to the intelligent student and the lesser intelligent student with respect to the mode of entering into the study of the text, whereas he says that the lesser intelligent students have to enter the study of the text with generating the conviction of the meaning of the text beforehand, while the more intelligent may enter into the text with just merely a doubt pertaining to the presentations as explained before. And sorry. And also with respect to the content of a text, so in order to analyze further whether the content of that text are reliable or not, so there are three different ways of investigating. The first all the phenomena are generally categorized into the three sets of phenomena in terms of the nature of subtlety. The first one is referred to as the evident phenomena. Then the next one is obscured phenomena. And the third one, the super obscured. So for the evident phenomena, which is are something that we can see by our own naked eyes, so a text presenting anything related to the evident phenomena has to be established by a mind of direct perception without having any contradictory to the direct perception of a valid cognition mind. Then, as the text presents obscure phenomena, so the obscure phenomena is generally conceived or understood by the inferior cognition. And when it referred to as understanding or to know, I think it's not like just lightning, just we bring a lamp into a darkness. So it's not like that, but it is more like you have a small fire before, and generally it becomes more and more bright. So I think there are different stages in the progress of our mind into study the nature. And the second set of phenomena, which is referred to as the obscure phenomena, is generally perceived by an inferior cognition, which also depends on the power of the object. And the third one is the super obscure, has to be merely depend on the teachings of the Buddha. So if a text presents one of these three phenomena in any way, and if you do not find any implications or wrong findings by any of those inferior cognitions, then we should be certain with respect to the presentation of the text as well. And next is the importance about the four relances. And as we read earlier, the four relances, the first start with do not rely upon the interpretable meaning, but rely upon the definitive meaning. And this is again presented in the both extensive and the middling presentation of Lam Rim Chemo by Lama Tsongkhapa, where Lama Tsongkhapa mentions that it is very important to draw a distinction between what is a definitive sutra and what is a non-definitive sutra. So having understood about the definitive and non-definitive sutra, then further we can generate understanding with respect to the nature of definitive or provisional. And also in the essence of the eloquence by Lama Tsongkhapa, he mentioned that the nature or the ultimate reality of all the phenomena are very difficult to ascertain. So therefore, we need to rely on a presentation of one of the great masters as being directly professed by the Lord Buddha. And it also depends on distinction between what is the definitive and what is non-definitive with respect to the teachings of Lord Buddha. And Gongtang Rinpoche also goes very detailed into the distinction between the definitive and the non-definitive. And further, within the non-definitive, he further classifies into two in terms of the non-definitive with respect to the verbal or the words, and non-definitive with respect to the presentation of the meaning of the text. And to draw the distinction of non-definitive based on the words is again with respect to understand the conventional or the ultimate truths and generating a rough understanding with respect to those presentations. So this is referred to as generating a distinction between an understanding of the distinction between what is definite with respect to the presentation of the words.
Uh,
And Gurdwara Rinpoche further says that it is very difficult to generate an understanding with respect to the text before understanding the contents or the presentations of the text. And once we are able to gain understanding of the non-definitive sutra or the text with respect to word, then we can even generate a sense of a very coarse or a gross understanding of the non-definite in terms of the meaning. And in order to establish the perfection of wisdom sutra, for example, as a definite sutra, we need to understand the content of those sutras. So if we are able to ascertain the content of the text as definite first, then it will be easy to label the perfection of wisdom sutra, which presents that content as a definite sutra. And Gurdwara Rinpoche also says further that generating an understanding with respect to the non-definitive in terms of the meaning is further depending upon the wisdom, depending on critical reflection. And so it shows clearly that the first understanding of the non-definite with respect to the word is the wisdom based on listening to the scriptural teachings. So again, we can draw, we can come to a conclusion here with respect to the order of the text. And His Holiness comments that the Heart Sutra, as far as the Swatantrika school is concerned, there is a little bit uncomfortable in its the literal meaning of the text, where there is expressed as the form and so on do not have the intrinsic existence, which is not accepted by the followers, by the proponents of Swatantrika Madhyamika philosophical school. And till now, the presentation is with respect to the Sangye Nirmochaya Sutra, Sutra Unraveling Buddha's Intended Meaning. And the next is the presentation with respect to the presentation done by the Akshamaya Nirdesha Sutra. So in this sutra, it has a little bit different presentation with respect to the definitive and the non-definitive meaning. This later sutra is actually accepted by the highest Madhyamika school, the Madhyamika Prasangika, as the ultimate text to draw a distinction between what is a definite and what is non-definite sutra. And in this sutra, the presentation reads in this way, that any kind of sutra that presents conventional phenomena and related are considered as non-definite, and any kind of sutra that presents with respect to the ultimate reality and the relation that related texts are labeled as definite texts. And Lama Tsongkhapa further explains this in The Essence of the Eloquence. Lama Tsongkhapa explains in this way that these two lines of the Akshamaya Nirdesha Sutra clarifies that the content of these two different sutras are that themselves can be also referred to as definite and non-definite, which means that when we distinguish the older phenomena in terms of the conventional and ultimate, so all the conventional phenomena are referred to as non-definite, and all the phenomena which are labeled as ultimate, like emptiness, are definitive. So any kind of text or sutra which presents on the ultimate truth are considered as the definitive sutras. So he saw in his comments that as far as the Madhyamika Swatantrika is concerned, it has it draws a distinction between what is its main evident presentation and the hidden presentations. So the evident presentation may be as accordingly literal, can be accepted as literal, as per the verse of the text, but the hidden may be different. So the Akshamaya Nirdesha Sutra further states that any kind of text or sutra that presents with respect to the different phenomena that appear in our daily life and also the different designations and so on are all categorized as non-definite. Sorry. When we have to present something with respect to the conventional truth, we need to use a lot of different way to present that in terms of using the words and the sentences. And in this way, we will be able to present a diverse meaning of the sutra. And in this way, this kind of the content and the text that presents are both referred to as definite. And the presentation of the ultimate truth is to present the very difficult point of the emptiness, which is the absence of all the conceptual elaborations. Sorry. And here the text further reads with respect to the different views of the scholars of the monasteries of Gomang and other monasteries. So the mere the word of the Akshamaya Nirdesha Sutra has different ways of interpreting by different school masters and traditions. And they further brings a critique to the highest Madhyamika school that if you label the definite or the conventional definite sutra or the non-definite sutra in terms of its content, as you explained before, and that too depending upon the presentation of the two truths and so on. In that case, when we present the conventional phenomena, even a person, something which is just a mere one subject, can be also interpreted or explained using different names and titles. So similarly, when we present the ultimate truth, which is emptiness, can be also present by different, using different words and so on. So in that, if that is the case, then it is difficult to gain a further agreement with respect to the difference between the definitive and non-definitive sutra. So this is the critique by the scholars here. So the answer to that is that even though both the truth, the provisional and the ultimate can be presented using different words and so on, it may be similar in that respect. However, the conventional truth, for example, a person, is something that we can explain using our conceptual thought and so on, and in our mind we can also generate a very clear understanding of the nature of the person as explained using the conceptual thoughts and the language. Whereas the presentation on ultimate, even though the basis of the emptiness may be also the conventional phenomena and so on, but the nature of the ultimate is merely an absence of inherent existence. So therefore, the emptiness is also referred as no sign, absence of signs, and absence of language, and so on. Even when the conceptual mind generates some understanding of the emptiness, but that conceptual mind also understands the emptiness through the general meaning and so on. So therefore, so that kind of the conceptual mind is not able to generate a very clear or the direct understanding of emptiness. And the detail of these critics are explained, we can find in Guna Rinpoche's writings and also in Guna Rinpoche's explanation on the second chapter of Avisamaya Alamkara. So till now here is this presentation with respect to the distinction between definitive and non-definitive sutra as per the highest Madhyamika school, Madhyamika Prasangika. And the next is the presentation of the definitive and the non-definitive sutra coming from the essence of the middle way philosophy by Bhava Viveka, which is according to the Madhyamika school of Svatantrika. So Bhava Viveka explains, and the followers of the Svatantrika school maintains that as far as the Perfection of Wisdom Sutra is concerned, of course, the evident presentation or the literal presentation of the sutra is also the ultimate truth. And also, we cannot interpret further with respect to the literal meaning of the Perfection of Wisdom Sutra. And in the essence of Middle philosophy by Bhava Viveka, further says that something can be labeled as a definitive sutra that presents the ultimate and also the presentation with respect to science. So if that is the case, then what about the sutra that presents the impermanence nature of all the phenomena? So the sutra that presents all the impermanence nature of all phenomena is actually do not have any content with respect to the emptiness. However, and that sutra can be literally accepted as it is presented. However, that sutra is not considered as a definitive sutra. Rather, it is labeled as non-definitive sutra. So therefore, in one's own system, we have to come to the conclusion that just being the sutra, literal meaning can be accepted as it is, do not guarantee that the sutra itself will be a definitive sutra. So therefore, for the sutra to be labeled as definite, it needs to have the content as ultimate phenomena, ultimate truth, and also that which can be literally accepted as per the verse of the sutra. Therefore, in this Madhyamika Prasangika school, for example, the sutras like the Wisdom of Heart Sutra, even though the content of the text is the ultimate truth or the emptiness, but Wisdom of Heart Sutra is not labeled as a definitive sutra. Rather, it is categorized under the non-definitive sutra because the literal meaning of the Perfection of Wisdom Sutra cannot be accepted according to the Madhyamika Prasangika school. And the school father explains that there are many sutras which cannot be accepted as the literally as per the literal of the text. For example, Lord Buddha's one of the sutra, Lord Buddha has stated that the father and mother are to be killed, and so this sutra cannot be accepted as per the literal. So therefore, the literal meaning of the text, that is the father and mother, the parents are to be killed, is not the real content of that text. And we further accept that this sutra actually do not say that our parents are to be killed. The reason is that whatever a sutra or the text of Buddha presented, then there need to be a disciple or a student which accepts that or which is a favorable recipient of that sutra. And there is no one in the world that you have to tell that your parents are to be killed. But Lama Tsongkhapa, in the essence of the eloquence, have a different interpretation of that sutra. He says that the sutra explaining about the parents to be killed are actually the parents, the killing of the parent is not the actual meaning of that text. But due to the conceptual thought, the background conceptual thought, playing with the language makes a difference. And so in our system, we accept that all that is a definitive sutra need to be able to accept as per the literal meaning of the text. So therefore, as we went before, in the Wisdom of Heart Sutra, where the verse says like, there is no form, no sound, no taste, and so on. So the absence of the taste or absence of the form is not the meaning of the text, because there is no one that you can present, or there is no one in the whole world that accepts that form do not exist. So here, we have to come to a conclusion that when the Heart Sutra says that there is no form, actually it means that there is no form that has an inherent existence. So the absence of inherent existence of a form is the actual evident meaning or the content of that phrase of the Wisdom Sutra. And Lama Tsongkhapa again draws a distinction between what is the evident meaning presentation of the text and the hidden meaning of the text in the rosary of golden rosary texts. So in the Heart Sutra, where the text reads that there is no form, no sound, and so on, actually, so the absence of the form and the sound is not the content of that text. So rather, we have to say that the absence of inherent existence of the sound and so form are the evident or the direct meaning of the text. And the next is about, again, in the Swatantrika school, there is a distinction with respect to applying the qualification, the object of negation, to the presentation of the sutra. So it says that, for example, in the Perfection of Wisdom Sutra, one may find a lot of phrases in the words which says there is no sound, no form, and so on. But either at the start or the end of the text, there are phrases where it says that here the absence of the form or no form actually means an absence of inherent form. So here the absence of inherent is the object, the inherent existence is the qualification of the object of negations. So this qualification of the object of negation is labeled in either in the starting or the end of the text. So therefore, so when it comes to the reading of the main text, so if you happen to encounter many phrases or the words which says that there is no sound and so on, we have to imagine or accept it that it actually means the absence of inherent existence, as the qualification object of negation is actually labeled in either the starting or the end of the text. So this is according to the Madhyamika Prasangika school. And next, there is also a reference with respect to adding the qualification ultimate to the terms, two different sutras. If that is the case, then what about the Heart Sutra? So the Heart Sutra's debate comes once again, that in Heart Sutras you can find the verse such as no form and so on, but we do not find any words or the phrases in the Heart Sutra where the qualification ultimate or the qualification object of negation is added in either the starting or the end of the Heart Sutra. So if that is the case, then if whether Heart Sutra is a text with the addition of the qualification of ultimate or not. So this is the critic here. So the answer from the Madhyamika Prasangika school says that, of course, even though you may not find the adding of qualification, object of negation or the ultimate literally in one of the words of the Heart Sutra, but since Heart Sutra presents the absence of inherent existence or the emptiness directly and evidently, therefore we have to maintain that. That is a text which has added the level of the qualification of object of negation to all the other words. And we can also find His Holiness comments that we can also find in the Takdong's presentations that even though the phenomena do not have its own reality in terms of the existence, but we have to accept the nature of dependent origination from others' perspective, in others, other people's perspective. So next, the critic comes with respect to the three turnings of the wheels of Buddha. The first turning of the wheel of Dharma, which is the presentation on the Four Noble Truths Sutra. And if you look at the Four Noble Truths Sutra, the presentation, the first wheel of Dharma, presentation on Four Noble Truths, that the literal meaning of that sutra actually presents all phenomena like form and so on having their own intrinsic existence with their own definitions. So therefore, there is no other presentation or the content of the text other than that. So therefore, the existence of the form as having its own inherent nature in terms of its definition has to be the main content of the Four Noble Truths text. The Buddha presented the Four Noble Truths in this way in order to bring the other students, especially in the two lower schools of Vaibhashika and Swatantrika, the two lower schools, into the teaching of Buddha. The reason is that these two lower schools of Vaibhashika and Swatantrika actually asserts that all the forms have their own existence in terms of existence from their definition. Therefore, the Buddha has to teach something which is equivalent to their mental dispositions. The Heart Wisdom Sutra, even though it do not have a very clear, literal adding of the qualification ultimate, but the Swatantrika Madhyamika school accepts those texts or the sutras as non-definitive sutra. Sorry. So we can find a few different presentation here. So the debate with respect to the classification of the text into definitive and non-definitive is further carried into with respect to the Vajrayana Buddhism. We can find in the root tantra of the Guhya Samaja that there is a verse which speaks about the five colors of the jewels and which presents the generation stage and also the postures and the gestures with respect to Guhya Samaja, which is considered as the non-definite. And another presentation where it speaks about the completion stage is being labeled as definitive state. So if this way of labeling the definitive and non-definitive is not found in any of the four schools, four philosophical tenets that we have studied, neither in the two lower schools and also in the mind-only schools and the madhyamika schools. So if these are not found in either of these texts, then how can we find assert further that these are actually the way to also a way of making a discrimination between the definitive and non-definitive. So if this has to be either one of the schools, philosophical schools' view, then it has to be as per the highest madhyamika school, the madhyamika prasangika school. If that is not, then we have to accept that this Guhya Samaja Tantra's presentation have to be either non-Buddhist presentation. But if that is the either one of the madhyamika school, then we have to again assert that all the presentation from the Guhya Samaja Tantra in terms of the four tantra schools, the Kriya schools and so on, have to be also accepted in the highest madhyamika school. Whereas generally the Vajrayana teachings and the perfection of wisdom do not accept all the presentations as each other's. So therefore, there is no way that the highest madhyamika school will accept all the presentations that are coming from the Guhya Samaja Tantra. So these are the two difficult points of critics here. And also, we cannot find a third party that all the sutras and the tantras of the Lord Buddha has to be either definite or non-definite. So therefore, there is no place for a third party. So in this respect, so the problem comes again with the Guhya Samaja Tantra's presentation of the generation stage as the non-definitive and the completion stage as definitive. Then we can also, there's also a similar references in the Akshomaya Nirdesha Sutra that any kind of the path that speaks about the stages of entering into one's practice are considered as non-definitive. And Gundar Rinpoche has also similar citations that with the help of a path, if we need to focus towards one's resultant state, and if we need to interpret in that way, then it has to be also non-definite or interpretable. So if there is no more state of enlightenment or presentation above that presentation, then that kind of the text or sutra has to be ascertained as definitive. So Gundar Rinpoche here summarizes and says that The Guhya Samaja's presentation with respect to completion stage and the generation stage is that in terms of the completion stage, still there is a lot to be understood and practiced. So the practitioner at that time has not attained the highest realizations because the generation stage, the completion stage is still remained. So therefore, so that stage and the Guhya Samaja Tantra that presents about the generation stage is a definitive, non-definitive text. Whereas the completion stage is the highest level of understanding in terms of Guhya Samaja Tantra. So therefore, since there is no other or not beyond presentation of that, so therefore such kind of presentation has to be accepted as definitive. So this is also similar to the presentation of the impermanence and the ultimate truth. Because when a text presence about the ultimate truth, the emptiness. Since there is nothing beyond the emptiness, the quality of all the phenomena, so any text that explains or presents about anything to do with emptiness or the ultimate truth is labeled as definitive. Impermanence, the sutra presenting impermanence, actually that may be a text that we can accept literally, but the nature of the impermanence is not the ultimate nature of all the phenomena. So a phenomena can have different features. For example, a form, the nature of product is also a nature of the form, and the impermanence is also the nature of the form, and the emptiness or the absence of inherent existence is also the nature of the form. But compared to the other qualifications, the absence of inherent existence, which is the emptiness, is the ultimate nature or the quality of any phenomena. So therefore, so if a sutra presents about impermanence, it has to be considered as non-definitive because the nature of the phenomena is not limited and there is still a greater nature of that phenomena to be presented. So these are with respect to labeling the text or the sutra as definitive or non-definitive in terms of their content. Sorry. So till here is the presentation with respect to the determination of a sutra as definitive and non-definitive in terms of their content or their subject. And following is another critic. And one of the texts of Kedum Norsan Gyatso, in that text it has been critiqued that some of the scholars of Tibet and India who claim that themselves to be the scholars of Madhyamaka school, they say that the ultimate truth is none other than the union of the clarity and emptiness. So the presentation on union of the clarity and emptiness, and those who claim to be, and these presenters, they claim themselves to be the highest Madhyamaka school, the followers of proponents of highest Madhyamaka school. So to this critic and assertion, Lama Tsongkhapa, in his chapter on spiritual insight, has very detailedly brought a lot of critics to these assertions. And they also distinguish. So now the following are with respect to the distinction between what is the Madhyamika Swatantrika and what is Madhyamika Prasangika. And they who claim themselves to be the highest Madhyamika school draws the distinction between the two schools as follows. So His Holiness comments here also that it's very difficult, it's very important for all of us to clearly be able to draw the distinction between the Swatantrika school of Madhyamika school and the highest Prasangika school. And these scholars further say that the one who establish or presence of the union of the clarity and insight is the first or the Swatantrika Madhyamika school, and absence of such existence is the highest Prasangika school. And if we have to draw the distinction in this way, then there are other critics that are coming from different texts. Sorry. And this is further being this assertion is further being critiqued and eliminated in the texts, some of the great texts of Indian masters. And if we have to accept that, if the mind of clarity and emptiness and all this other consciousness and the phenomena have to be accepted as the union of clarity and emptiness and labeled as illusion, then we have to accept that this phenomena should not have any sense of their inherent existence from their side, their own side. Also, when we speak to conceptual elaborations, we also have a special mention here in the precious garland by Nagarjuna. So if all the phenomena has to be understood or presented in terms of the union of clarity and emptiness, then those schools also have to accept that all the phenomena do not have any kind of existence from its own nature. But as far as the Madhyamika Prasangika school is concerned, it accepts that there is a certain level of inherent existence from naturally existence from the object side. And also, Madhyamika Prasangika school asserts that the emptiness, all the ultimate goal of ultimate reality is the existence of the object, half by its own nature and half by designation by conceptual thought. So then this cannot be accepted in terms of your previous assertions. And if that is the case, then we have to also accept that all the presentations that are coming from Nagarjuna has to be accepted in a similar way, which is not possible. His Holiness comments that in order to gain understanding of the self, the person, as being inherent of existence, it is very important to first understand the inherent absence understanding with respect to aggregates. So therefore, the aggregate here as the basis of designation and the person as the object or the quality to be designated. So if there is not even a slightest appearance from its own nature in terms of the aggregate, then how can the person, which is a mere designated, can have its own existence? So here it's important that His Holiness comments that it is important to gain some understanding of the emptiness pertaining to the phenomena first, then later gain some understanding with respect to the emptiness of self. So when we analyze in this way and applying different reasonings, then we will come to a conclusion that there is no other way out of that except for the absence of inherent existence. And if someone understands really the whole understanding with respect to the understanding of self as absence of inherent existence, then that person can also understand the absence of inherent existence with respect to phenomena. So this is the main debate with respect to different scholars about the order of the stages of generating the understanding of the emptiness with respect to phenomena and self. So we will cover that detail later. So these critics of drawing the distinction between the Madhyamika Svatantrika and Prasangika schools are all refuted here, negated here by different reasonings and the quotations by Lama Tsongkhapa and R. Nagarjuna. Next is with respect to the order of the understanding of the emptiness pertaining to the self and the person and phenomena. It is said that when the two graspings arises, the grasping pertaining to the person and the grasping pertaining to the phenomena. So it is clearly stated by, clearly presented in the supplement to the Middle Way by Chandrakriti that first we generate the grasping of inherent existence pertaining to phenomena, and with that as the basis, then the grasping grasping of inherent existence pertaining to the self arises after that. So in terms of the order of the development of the two graspings, the graspings of the inherent existence pertaining to the phenomena arises first and the self later. But when we understood the absence of the inherent existence pertaining to self and phenomena, it is stated that first we need to understand the absence of inherent existence pertaining to self first, self as an absence of inherent existence first, then later we have to move to the understanding of phenomena as absence of inherent existence. So these are the two different orders here. But then we also find different quotations here and citations, even from Lama Tsongkhapa himself, that which states that in order to gain a complete understanding of the self as empty of inherent existence, one need to understand the phenomena as absence of inherent existence, which is against the earlier presentation. So if that is the case, then the understanding of the absence of inherent existence of the phenomena has to come before understanding of the self as absence of inherent existence, which is not the case. And there are also views with respect to understanding of the meditative absorption as absence of all conceptual elaborations, and the post-meditative absorption as having different conceptual elaborations. So most of these citations here are cited from the Golden Rosary by Lama Tsongkhapa, but it is said that Lama Tsongkhapa has written the Golden Rosary when he has not completed his understanding of emptiness. He composed this text when he was about 31 years old. So therefore, most of the presentations that are with respect to emptiness coming from the Golden Rosary by Lama Tsongkhapa are actually based on the presentation by the earlier ancient Tibetan scholars that came before Lama Tsongkhapa. So we find in the Golden Rosary different presentations where in one instance Lama Tsongkhapa referred to the difference of the meditative absorption and the post-meditative absorptions, having conceptual elaborations and the absence of conceptual elaborations respectively. So therefore, this is also not able to accept it as per the presentations. And in the systems of the Haribhadra and so on, they consider the meditative absorption as an illusory combine of the emptiness understanding and also an illusory state of mind. So there are similar presentations that we can find in other texts also. And there are also now the following critics and presentations with respect to the terminology, the existence of the terminology, the Prasangika and the Swatantrika Madhyamika schools. So these schools have different ways to distinction between the masters of Madhyamika schools such as Shantideva and so on. And also they have different presentation with respect to the ultimate truth. The ultimate truth as being innumerable and so on. And also we have this inferior cognition that understood the emptiness, especially for the bodhisattvas at the level of the path of accumulation and the preliminary paths. And also when they reach the third level of path, that is the path of seeing the direct emptiness. So the object of those, whether it is an inferential cognition that understood the emptiness or the meditative absorption, which is by itself a direct valid perception that understood the nature of emptiness clearly. So both of these minds are actually focusing on the ultimate reality or the emptiness. So therefore, the reason why they labeled such kind of Madhyamika, the presentation as the union of clarity and emptiness. And Isolana's comments here that as far as the doubt is concerned, the mind, the uncertainty mind or the doubt, even the arahats who are no more suffering also may have certain levels of doubt. And most of these earlier scholars actually are not able to understand the explanation coming from Shantideva, where he states that where he draws the distinction between the Madhyamika Svatantrika and Prasangika school. So they mistook the interpretation of those terms, the literal terms. And all the phenomena, whether they are inherent existence or the inherent existence or both, and neither. So the four alternatives, the conceptual elaborations of the four possibilities, four alternatives, are considered as innumerable emptiness or ultimate truth. And appearance to the mind, nothing appearance of just mere absence, but without any clarity of emptiness, is considered as understanding of the ultimate reality. So to bend on these misinterpretations of the text of Shantideva and understanding, they come to draw the distinction between Madhyamika Prasangika and Savatantrika. And the mere absence of conceptual elaborations actually in our system is with respect to the understanding of emptiness, but they are not able to gain the complete understanding of the mere absence of conceptual elaborations. In our system, the mere absence of conceptual elaboration is the mere absence of the object of negation. And also, it refers to the inferential mind, to which when they understood the emptiness, there is an absence of any duality experience or appearances. And these are actually the presentation with respect to what we refer to as the presentation of the object of negation that is too broad. So Lama Tsongkhapa, in his presentation on spatial insight, he draws a distinction between understanding the object of negation and the importance of clearly understanding it. And he says that in order to understand the object of negation clearly, as presented by Shantideva, we need to first understand what are the two alternatives or two other way of critics or the wrong misunderstanding of or misinterpretations of the object of negation. The first misinterpretation is the object of negation that is too wide, which means in reality they are going to eliminate all the phenomena. And ultimately, they end up saying that nothing actually exists, which is against the teachings of Nagarjuna and Buddha. Sorry. And the next is the presentation with respect to the reasoning based on which we generate the understanding of the emptiness as presented by the concise Lamrim teaching by Lama Tsongkhapa. It is said that among the many reasonings that we apply in order to generate the understanding of emptiness, one of the most important is the reason called the absence of one and many with respect to ultimate. And such kind of reasonings are actually very applicable to the person who do not have any strong doubt towards the absence of towards the true existence or not. And this kind of reasoning will be valid towards those persons who still have some kind of doubt towards the true existence of phenomena. To other audience who have already do not have any doubt with respect to the understanding of the true existence of phenomena or not, so such kind of reasoning will not be valid. So this is as per the presentation that we find in the concise Lamrim by Lama Tsongkhapa. So Shama Rinpoche goes further and tries to interpret the quotation. So he says that, of course, if a person has a very strong attachment or strong understanding with respect to all the phenomena as illusory and so on, so for such a person, the above presentation may be correct. But for someone who has doubt with respect to the seed of a plant having a true existence or not, and someone who has still doubt with respect to the seed being a true existence or not, so even for that person, we can apply the reasoning called one and many. The absence of the one and many of ultimate reasoning. So even if we apply this reasoning to this kind of person, we still have to accept that it is a valid. So the way to interpret the quotation coming from the concise Lamrim may be that for someone who has already understood the nature of the seed as not being truly existent, then for such a person, since he already understood that, there is no reason to apply that reasoning. And for other people who, even though they have, the other one who have already understood the seed as being absence of true existence and having that kind of understanding continually. So for such a person, then there is no possibility that he will have any doubt about the nature of the seed. So maybe we have to interpret the quotation coming from Lamrim in this way. And there is another quotation coming from the Lamrim text that with respect to the absence of the conceptual elaboration or the absence of the object of negation, and once we gain an understanding of the absence of the object of negation, then automatically along with that we also generate the understanding of that phenomena as existing without having any inherent existence. So these two understanding from the positive side eliminating the absence of the understanding the absence of object of negation from the positive side, and from the other side understanding the phenomena as mere designated are actually the same shape of a coin, and are also and the first one is actually said to be understood by the inferential cognition. So this is also the quotation coming from Lamrim. So Shamabha Rinpoche interprets in this way that ultimate reality is something the art of the the understanding of the conceptual thoughts. The conceptual thoughts can generate a mere coarse understanding of the emptiness. So therefore, it may have been referred to as something not to be understood by inferent cognition, because it cannot understand the very clear or the direct understanding of the emptiness.
Sorry.
And next is the presentation with respect to the two distinction, the two philosophical schools that we find within the Madhyamika school. Within the Prasangika Madhyamika school, we have a few masters who, even though they are both Prasangika schools, but one accepts the presence of the external phenomena, and the other do not accept the external phenomena as existing different from the mind. However, Chandrakirti is said to be a philosophical proponent which did not rely on any other philosophical systems to interpret his understanding. And we can find in the auto commentary on the supplement to the Middle Way by Chandrakirti that some of the masters like Baba Viveka, some of the masters like Baba Viveka, actually, even though they are Prasangika Madhyamika, but they follow the presentation of one of the lower schools like Svatantrika as far as the assertion of the external phenomena are concerned. So Chandrakirti here states that what he is going to present here is quite unique compared to any other traditions and the schools. And also we have a similar quotation from The Essence of the Eloquence by Lama Tsongkhapa, is that any kind of the teachings that is devoid or that is away from the presentation, that is against the presentation on two truths, will not be able to establish as a valid teachings. So therefore, the Chandrakirti's teachings are very profound, not just in terms of the presentation on the ultimate truth, but also on the presentation on the conventional truth and so on. Therefore, it is very different from the presentations of the lower schools who are considered to be the true proponents of true existence. We're changing now.
So the text goes through lots of arguments about the different philosophical schools positing the phenomena which are substantially existent or imputedly existent. So there are different meanings according to the different schools of thought within the Buddhist philosophical internet systems. And so they don't mean the same, even though they use the same term, such as substantially existent or imputedly existent phenomena. The author goes through various explanations according to different commentators and also quotes from different texts written by perhaps Jetsun Kapa and then also the first Dalai Lama's the ornament of epistemology or ornament of reasoning and so forth with regard to these points. And then so with regard to the object of negation, it's that the author says that it is this inherent existence which does not exist at all, and therefore, when you when we talk about the four key points, regarding the ascertainment of the object to be negated. It says, it is, the meaning here should be understood that if that object to be negated, which does not exist at all, if it does exist, then it should be like such and such. And so what that refers to is that you should have a clear idea of this object to be negated, whereby you could have a very clear generic image of what it would be like if things were to have any inherent existence. And and you should be able to differentiate between these two things, that the object to be negated in that generic image. The generic image, I mean, which is ascertained, you should be able to ascertain, differentiate between these two things, that the generic image is ascertained by valid cognition, and therefore it does exist, whereas the inherent existence of things does not exist. I mean, inherent existence is not there as an existent, and therefore you should be able to differentiate between these two. Otherwise, without making this distinction, you may think that whatever is exist. You may confuse that whatever exists should exist inherently. And then if you try to negate everything, then that is going what is known as the great insight, the penetrative insight section of Je Rinpoche. With regard to negating the object of negation, refuting the object of negation, excessive refutation of the object of when taking it too far.
Yeah.
And so refuting an overly the Lakdong Chemo, the great insight section of Chitong Kapa goes through the refuting an overly restricted identification of the object to be negated, and then that there is an overly excessive refutation of the object of negation and identification of the object of to be negated. And so without being able to make this the distinction between what exists and what exists as inherently existent separately, there's no way one can identify the object to be negated. So before one has found the Madhyamaka view, the generic image of this the object to be negated having ascertained it that there is this generic image that is formed on the mind, so once you are able to identify that, then you could accept that one would be able to who's able to make this distinction can differentiate between what is meant by the existence and what is meant by inherent existence. So there are those who can do that, we can accept. But it says in the text, it mentions that before a meditator or a practitioner has found the Madhyamaka view of non-inherent existence, the mere existence of a person and inherent or existence of the person by way of its own independent defining characteristics. It's not possible that they can distinguish between these two, the mere existence of a person and that the person has any defining characteristics of its own. I mean, these two cannot be distinguished by someone who has not yet found the middle way view. And in the Guomang textbook, also it explains like that. And so this is also what is said in the Guomang textbook, and therefore what was said earlier and what is said in the text by Tsongkhapa and Jamyang Shebe Dorje, whether there is any contradiction between these two, one should still investigate, it says. And therefore, before finding the view of the middle way, with regard to the identification of the objects to be negated, the author says that it may be more convenient, I think. It's more convenient to say that someone who has before finding the middle way, the middle view of the view of the middle way, when that person recognizes the object to be negated, he or she does so with that mind which is called correct assumption. that the person is able to differentiate that something exists and that it the existence and between existence and the inherent existence, the person is able to make a distinction in the manner of a correct assumption. And by way of relying on the term generality. So if we assert that, it may be more convenient to hold on to one's position, the author Jinzhen says. And then with regard to excessive identification of the object to be negated, Then with regard to the explaining the excessive identification of the object of negation, object to be negated in the excessive manner in Lakdong Chemo by Jerembo Che. So it would be one would be able to understand it quite easily, it says, if one compares how this object to be negated is refuted by comparing what is explained in that part of the text. And there are 27 chapters to the Mula Madhyamaka Karika, the root wisdom verses of the middle way. And the 26th chapter shows how things could be asserted or established in convention by through this presentation of the dependent origination in its forward and reversal sequence. And then the 24th chapter shows that although things do not have any inherent existence, if things are not devoid of any intrinsic existence, then arising and cessation and so forth would not be feasible. And whereas if things are empty of inherent existence, then those are also feasible. And therefore, it shows the how it is tenable to present things in conventional terms. And then the rest of the 25, the rest of the 25 chapters of Mula Madhyamaka Karika mainly refutes inherent existence. In the 24th chapter, the lack of inherent existence and the absence thereof is shown in the 24th chapter. Regarding that, regarding them, it says. And so what is said in this 24th chapter regarding how things are empty or how things are not empty, the Therefore, the way it shows that things could or could not be established as conventionally existence, this should be applied to the rest of the Madhyamaka Karika, the whole text. And then it mentions some annotation. In the annotation, it says that the 25th chapter, mainly could create some confusion. It says that the term mainly in the 25th chapter could create some confusion. And then in the 24th chapter, where it says, whatever is dependently arisen, that is said to be emptiness. It shows that the meaning of emptiness is the meaning of dependent origination is emptiness. And then it says that that is the designation by dependence, and the meaning of the, regarding the meaning of that line, it says that it shows, this line shows that the meaning of emptiness is dependent origination. And so the lines regarding these lines, the first two lines, these four lines, the first two lines are their meaning are very clear. But regarding the third line, the Prasanapada commentary says, emptiness. Prasanapada says that that emptiness is designated by dependence, and so that is what should be what I establish or present. And so by dependence on the parts such as the wheel and so forth of a chariot is designated. And so just as it is said like this in the Prasanapada commentary by Chandrakirti, in the great commentary, by Tsongkhapa, it says the same thing clearly. And so, when it says that the meaning of emptiness is the dependent origination, it is not like the relationship here. The meaning here is not a reference like when we say the definition of the avas, which is said to be the bulging belly and so forth. I mean, is the meaning of avas, and so it's not like that. Because if it were so, then if the meaning of emptiness, by saying the meaning of emptiness is dependent origination, if it were like the relationship between this bulging belly and so forth, which means vase, then someone who has ascertained dependent origination, there would be this absurd consequence. It says that someone who has understood dependent origination would would have to, and that very mind, and have to understand emptiness. And so this is not possible. So this part that we have covered today is quite tough, isn't it? Amatiga.